Hey, what's up? This is T, also on Twitter as Ricky Rawls, RickyRawls. This is episode 004 of Champagne Sharks, Civility Rights. Hey, what's up? Was supposed to have co-host today, but there were technical difficulties that made it not happen because it was going to be remote and still had to work out some of the glitches on someone's computer. So it's just going to be me today. And what I wanted to discuss was a couple of things in the news, but one of them I want to get out of the way right away, and that's Bill Maher, because everyone's talking about it and it's kind of annoying to me, but I figure it's worth talking about because I think there's a lot of teachable moments in it. So, I mean, everyone knows what happened. He was talking to some politician. I think the name is Ben Sasse. I don't really know how to pronounce his name. And this politician talked about Bill going out in the fields with him. And Bill goes, "Oh no, I'm a house nigger. You know, just say, I don't really go out in the field, or I'm for more delicate work. I don't really do that type of hard work." And then everybody kind of flipped out. And he wasn't even talking about black people, referring to them. He just invoked the whole thing about slavery. He evoked the imagery of slavery and Jim Crow by saying house nigger. And the thing that I found really interesting about it is he said so many other messed up things in the past. So I don't even understand exactly why maybe people snap so hard on this thing, and something I'll get back to you later. But among the things that happened, Chance the Rapper went on Twitter saying he wanted him fired. People were just lighting up Twitter, and think pieces galore were going out about, you know, this is too far. And Donna Brazil said, you know, on Twitter, you know, "Bill Maher apologizes for use of racial slur on Real Time. Let's accept his contrition and move on." And David Axelrod, who used to be part of the Obama administration, chimed in and said, "Agree with Donna Brazil. Bill Maher said a careless, offensive thing, for which he rightly apologized. He is not a racist." And then a lot of people kind of lit into them about doing that. But the most emphatic response, I would say, came from Michael Eric Dyson. And he tweeted the following: "I'm emotional about this. I love Bill Maher. He's a very dear friend. But as I've made plain through the years, the N-word should be reserved for black use. Period. Having said that, as he shows on Real Time nearly every week, Bill's been a champion of many fights for black justice. He has bravely and relentlessly pilloried racism, white privilege, and white indifference to the black plight. Plus, he has, from the start, featured brilliant black personalities on his show, whether on network TV or now cable. In short, he has used his platform to highlight black faces and amplify black voices that might never have otherwise been given such a prominent perch to tell the truth. Given the Bill Maher I know, he will use this opportunity to strengthen his role as an ally to black people." So Dyson is basically kind of selling himself as, you know, a representative for black people with the right to forgive Bill Maher on behalf of black people. Which, no one's electing him anything. He can't do that. But he is kind of implying he, on some level, has the authority to do that. And anyway, all three defenders are people who have appeared on Bill Maher in the past. And you'll notice a lot of people who are either defending him, black people who are defending him, or who are just remaining silent on it. A lot of them have been on the show, and a lot of them probably hope to be on the show. And that's one of the unfortunate realities we have to face, is that a lot of people want that access. And we're in a state of affairs now where comedians are the most popular, influential voices in politics right now. And, you know, it really hit critical mass around the time of Daily Show with John Stewart and the Stephen Colbert Show. But, I mean, it's still going strong. Liberals are still obsessed with comedians eviscerating their least favorite politicians. And it's an extension of that West Wing worldview where, like, have you ever had an argument with someone and you kind of whiffed the argument and you just fucked it up and you look back and you say, man, I just thought of the perfect thing I could have said, but now it's too late. And I think things like the West Wing and then Jon Stewart and Stephen Colbert and John Oliver and Bill Maher and all these comedians, I think it's a liberal's media version of, wow, I wish I said that. It's that same thing. Like, there's like vicarious living through these comedians where, you know, oh, that's the kind of owning that I wish I did when I spoke to my family at Thanksgiving and my racist uncle or my Trump-supporting cousin was spouting off at the table. You know, I think there's a lot of fantasy involved there. But for whatever reason, I mean, liberals love their comedians, and they've become a big force in politics. Like, you have to win them over. You have to, on your campaign, be seen doing sketches with Zach Galifianakis, and, I mean, it's just the state of things today. So, you can tell by how all these people are bending over backwards to cape for Bill Maher, and you look at all their histories and you've seen they've all been on his show, and some people are just being quiet, but also because they don't want to lose a chance to be on the show. And I mean, Dyson basically gives the game away in his statement on behalf of Bill Maher. Like you look at it, and in the statement he says that he's a friend of black people, but why is he a friend of black people? Quote, he has, from the start, featured brilliant black personalities on his show, whether on network TV or now cable. In short, he has used his platform to highlight black faces and amplify black voices that might never have otherwise been given such a prominent perch to tell the truths. End quote. So basically, he's saying what makes Bill Maher a friend to black people is that he helps black public intellectuals get on TV and make money. And, you know, that's what diversity representation politics is all about. You know, it's just, we want a seat at the table. It could be, as I've said before, you're probably sick of hearing it, you know, get us a seat at the table, even if it's a shitty table. We just want access. Access to what? To whatever white people have. And that's all that matters. So, I mean, this is what was discussed. Let me back up. White approved black intellectuals. I've said this in the past, but they're like intellectual coffee creamers. Like, just like a real coffee creamer is there to take the edge off of pure black coffee and make it easier to digest and less harsh and less black, A creamer in the media exists to make the black experience easier to ingest and digest to white people, to take off those rough edges from blackness, to make it whiter. I also like to call them the bougie black media blue check BuzzFeed blavity crowd. A blue check meaning one has been verified as a public figure by Twitter. When you have that blue check, you're a public figure. So if you're black and intellectual, that blue check is almost like the new proof in this technological digital era that you are a black public intellectual, or at least a black public digital intellectual, which is where the media, where commentary, where punditry is going. It's like the internet's moving everything. So the best piece written about black public intellectuals remains "What Are the Drums Saying, Booker" by Adolph Reed. And in the piece, Reed describes the definitive role of the black public intellectual as, quote, "interpreting the opaquely black heart of darkness for whites," end quote. And he also describes the criteria for being considered a black public intellectual. Like, one, present yourself as an authority on black opinion and on anti-racism. Two, write social commentary on these topics or give speeches on these topics. And three, be known to white elite major institutions. And that last part is important. Being co-signed and recognized by white elite major institutions is probably the most important factor to be filled, along with being, you know, with being a black public intellectual. Because being co-signed and recognized by prestige media almost makes you real. Like, it makes you matter. Like if you're a black intellectual or thinker who only has a black following, you're really not likely to be considered a black public intellectual. Like, the type of black thinkers who the black masses tend to respect and follow are likely to be dismissed equally both by white elites and the black public intellectuals that white elites anoint as. Like, that type of black thinker is likely to be dismissed as a street corner philosopher. So, and something else about prestige media and white institutions, even when the prestige media has a black face, like, say, things like The Root or Ebony, a lot of times they're white-owned or facing toward the white gaze, G-A-Z-E. So it's like, it's basically white prestige media in blackface. Now, black public intellectuals don't actually have to have a following among the black masses or the brothers in the streets. If anything, I think it probably works against them to have that. And I don't think they really care. All they care about is selling books and speeches to white liberals and getting platforms to be famous and make more money. And Bill Maher gives access to white liberals and a big platform. And if you get a good soundbite on the show, you're going to go viral on YouTube when they do those 1,000 think pieces on Saturday about your exchange on Bill Maher. You know, they'll write 100 articles on the same one conversation if it's good enough. So these black public intellectuals, they center the white gaze and write for white audiences and always write with white sensibilities, you know, in mind. They write for the other and not for fellow black people so much. So their concern is always with, you know, demonstrating black people's equal humanity and trying to get white people to recognize and acknowledge said humanity, but also they really want to make a lot of these white liberals feel like you know, I don't want to say honorary black people, but people with who are closer to the black experience than white conservatives. People who, you know, they may have their problems with, you know, being rude sometimes unintentionally, like having white privilege, being inconsiderate. But at the end of the day, you know, they're friends to the blacks. And this is why Dyson has to keep championing Bill Maher, and Donna Brazile has to do it too, you know, as friends to black people, because that's one of the services you provide as a black public intellectual. You give the white liberal the nod of authenticity to help him, you know, feel like he's a little more authentic. And I think that kind of creates a lot of Bill Maher's comfort level with how he speaks to black people, about black people. And I just think he severely miscalculated. He thought, like his comfort, he just really got carried away. And then I think he kind of realized he messed up even in the moment, because he quickly said, oh, you know, I'm just joking. But I have a feeling he probably does stuff like that a lot in private. For him to just have a mental slip like that in public. But it's never, with the black public intellectual, it's never really about black empowerment or political mobilization. That's why they're always obsessed with white allies and building cross-minority coalitions whenever they do try to talk about black politics. You know, I call them the white ally industrial complex, the white ally media industrial complex. Like, they just are very other obsessed, very obsessed with the white liberal gaze. Now, they primarily want acceptance for blacks by others more than they want black self-sufficiency and empowerment. And even when they do seem to be writing for black people, it's for other black people like themselves, like other black people who are as primarily concerned with acceptance from whites over everything else also. So even when they're addressing black people, it's still really directed at white sensibilities and white approval anyway. Kind of like when you, like, if black people commiserate with other black people over lack of white acceptance and their shared frustration about how white people, including white liberals, still won't accept them as fully human, those two black people, even though they're talking to each other, they're still obsessing over the white gaze, over being viewed at by whites. So even talking to each other, it's still the same thing. It's still about the white liberal. And Dyson is part of this tradition, and it's an old tradition, but he's definitely part of it, and that's kind of what his job is to do. Like, his idea of championing black people is making sure that they get to sit, the middle class and higher black people get to sit anywhere that middle class, white and higher, middle class and higher white people get to sit. You know, so, like I said, get a seat at the table, even if it's a shitty table. So I call this "please love me" anti-racism, as opposed to "fuck what other people think, let's do us" anti-racism. So nothing about this is surprising. Like, a lot of people were going in on Dyson over this, and I was like, it's like getting mad at a dog for barking. It's what it does. It's what it's supposed to do. I mean, your problem was expecting the dog to not be a dog. I mean, this is what he does. He has to always stay relevant. So it worked out, because Dyson was added to the upcoming episode of the Bill Maher Show. Someone else was bumped off. I forget who, but The other guests are going to include rapper and actor Ice Cube. And the roundtable is going to have David Gregory and David Jolly, who are two white guys, and activist Simone Sanders, who's another black woman. So now you're going to have three black people on the roundtable, probably talk to Bill Maher. He's going to do his mea culpa, and it's probably going to lead to a lot of ratings because a lot of people are going to want to tune in and see what these black people are going to say to Bill Maher. It's going to be like, okay, what is he going to do? What's going to happen? Is it going to be a good soundbite? Like, because everything has to be entertaining. Nobody cares about if it's informative. If it's entertaining, then that's its own value in and of itself. So all Bill Maher has to do to get out of this is just provide good entertainment. So he's going to have these three black people on. It's going to be like wrestling, you know, where I don't really know who the current wrestlers are, but everyone's going to scream at each other. People are going to take each other's side. A lot of good trash talking will happen. Hopefully some good sound bites will come out of it. It'll make a couple of viral YouTube clips. There's going to be a bunch of think pieces about, you know, so-and-so eviscerated this, or so-and-so educated Bill Maher and his privilege. And he's going to get extra attention out of it, extra ratings, and then move on. But that wasn't the most interesting part of all this to me. What was interesting about it to me, and something I want to discuss about with, I always talk about with liberals, how everything is about decorum, politeness. In the Hamilton episode, in episode 003, I was talking about how to a West Wing type liberal, all they care about is whether, like, the worst thing you can do is be rude. The worst thing you can do is be uncouth, coarse, incivil. Like, and a lot of that goes toward how they view racism too. Like, they think racism is the arena of the unintelligent and the uncouth. So liberals often view racism in terms of like dumb hicks and rednecks or whatever, just being stupid and coarse, or people who are just rude, so they're using slurs. They think, oh, this person said this mean word and they yelled at somebody and they went on a rant. That's racism. That's wrong. So things like trafficking in stereotypes, perpetuating systems of inequality, growing the prison industrial complex, using black people as glorified slave labor, which is another hot topic that happened this week with a passage from Hillary's old book resurfacing, where, you know, she was basically was running like a plantation where she was using black prison labor in the Arkansas mansion. And a lot of people were defending her because if to you, racism is just calling somebody nigger or lynching them or, you know, being like a yokel with four teeth who's like saying he doesn't want to live near black people. You know, if it's all about incivility and stupidity, then what Hillary did there is not really racist. And you saw that in all the crazy things liberals were saying. Like, liberals were saying things like, oh, it was great job experience for the prisoners, you know, or do you think they want to sit in their cells all day, or she treated them very well. You know, I'm sure they were fed, and, you know, all types of crazy stuff. So when black liberals think the same way. They get very, very caught up on the civility and the decorum. So you can kind of do the same stuff, traffic and stereotypes, do all types of out of bounds stuff, but just kind of do it in a way that's not overtly hostile or rude or stupid sounding. Like, you know, do it very intellectually. It's a lot of that, like, take for example, like Charles Murray or Andrew Sullivan and why they still get mainstream credibility. Like, Andrew Sullivan was even in Batman v Superman. And they were trafficking in all these race science theories. And because they never called anybody nigger or coon or anything overtly bad, and because they seemed smart, it wasn't a destroyer of their careers. A lot of these people, they don't get their comeuppance until they actually get rude. Like, you see someone like John Derbyshire at National Review. He was writing racist stuff all the time, and the editor even said, you know, we kind of liked him because, you know, he kind of had a winking type of boundary pushing to him. But at one point, his racial Tourette's got the better of him, and he just wrote this really overtly nasty screed about black people, about why you shouldn't live near them. And then they had to let him go. But he was racist all along. They pretty much admitted that they knew it, and that's why they hired him. And yeah, so going back to Marr, right? So he says the word nigger, and then that just makes everyone fly off the handle. But, like, let's take a look at stuff that he said before this, because I think it's very interesting, right? So before this, here are some things that he said. He defended Donald Sterling's right to privacy. And so Donald Sterling, the racist NBA basketball team owner, so defended Donald Sterling. He had all these weird jokes about Obama that used ghetto stereotypes. You know, for example, he was joking about Obama smoking Newports. He said, this is what he said. He said, the president was so proud of the Affordable Care Act, 7 million plus enrollments, that he proudly displayed a pack of Newports in the Rose Garden of the White House. He called Obama a black ninja gangster president, which wouldn't, if you called a white president a gangster, it wouldn't even make sense, but with Obama, apparently it does. He was talking to Ta-Nehisi Coates about the reparations article, and then he just made a bizarre reference about black people and Cadillacs to Ta-Nehisi Coates, and it was actually a joke or a saying that I have heard before about, you know, black people in the Cadillacs, but it was such a reach based on what Coates was actually talking about. Like, it was a logical jump that made no sense. Like, he just couldn't help bringing that weird stereotype in, as if he just couldn't relate to black people outside of racial jokes and stereotypes. He once said Obama needs to act like a, quote, real black president and teach the BP execs a lesson by going into the BP meetings flashing his gat. Yeah, so basically Obama wasn't a real black president because he didn't have a gun in his pants and wasn't menacing white people. This is what he thinks being black is. And speaking of what he thinks being really black is and isn't, he had all these jokes about Wayne Brady, always bashing him for saying that he wasn't really black, meaning he's not ghetto. So being ghetto, being a quote-unquote gangster, that's what he thinks being black is. Like, he's probably like one of those white guys that likes to tell his straight-laced black friends, oh man, I'm more black than you are. You know, just because he knows more rap songs. That type of patronizing stuff. And Wayne Brady really got in his ass about it. Like, Wayne Brady really, really got upset and threatened to beat his ass. There was also, he also defended Paul Dean for using the word nigger. And even that was fine because he didn't say it himself. He was still being polite even when defending someone else's right to be impolite to black people. So still, as long as he's not impolite himself, that's fine. So, oh, he minimized Bill O'Reilly's racist Maxine Waters joke. He called it a bullshit issue to, you know, denigrate a 70-something-year-old black woman politician on her physical appearance, saying that she has James Brown hair, like James Brown wig. Yeah, and he minimized that. Like, this is the great friend to black people that Dyson is defending because, you know, hey, he lets black people come on the show and sell their wares. There's an author named Tommy Christopher who he's compiled, and he's been on this beat for a while. He's compiled a lot of these Bill Maher racist jokes. He's been saying for a while that Bill, it's funny because he's a white guy, but he's been saying that Bill Maher is a liberal who's way too comfortable trafficking in black stereotypes. And I've seen interviews with him where a lot of white liberals were like, oh, but he's not a conservative. I mean, you know, he's a friend of black people. It's funny, but this guy was calling it from a long time ago. So, I mean, it all goes to show how silly liberal anti-racism is, because it's all about civility and decorum and word policing and tone policing and optics. But the actual content is so low on the totem pole of concerns. You know, so instead of civil rights, I call it civility rights, meaning, like, to them, what black people are fighting for is not empowerment, not independence, not access to capital, not redistribution of wealth or redistribution of opportunities or cosmic justice for black and brown and other non-white people around the world, or for women or gays. What they're fighting for is the right to civility, to not be exposed to rudeness or coarseness. That's it. It's all about no one at your job is going to call you a nasty word or be rude or embarrass you. When you have your white boyfriend and you go to his family's house for Thanksgiving, you're not going to have to be subjected to rude treatment, like them touching your hair without permission, things like that. This is all that really matters. And you see it in a lot of these think pieces about white privilege and check your privilege. And when you read this stuff, it's never really about white supremacy, like real power, real redistribution of power, real taking of power, gaining access to power. No, it's always about when you're talking to a black person, it's a bunch of etiquette. It's a racial etiquette. Like, you know, you should always step to the side and listen to black voices. You shouldn't touch their hair without asking permission. You shouldn't do this. And it's just all about educating white people behaviorally, optics, what to say, what to do, how to say it, the script you have to follow to be an anti-racist and to be a friend to a black liberal. You know, like, just don't make me feel like I'm any less accepted than you at any given point. And they're satisfied with that. A lot of that white privilege stuff never goes deeper than just a rundown of etiquette. Never goes past it. So This is the same thing with this Bill Maher thing. He said all that stuff that I described, and there's a lot more. I mean, he's talking to Cornel West, and he's recently, he has a shouting match, and he's, this guy is an Ivy League professor, and you know, he's just talking down to him like he's a child. And that's fine, because he never used a slur. So what makes the content to me even crazier is that, and I want to make something clear, I'm not defending or minimizing Bill Maher saying nigger. That was wrong, and he should have gotten grief over it. But he has been doing this for a while. Like, he should have gotten this type of grief a while before, and I think it's not even the worst thing he said. Because at least in this, he's not actually referring to any black people, talking about black people, or whatever. He's just invoking an unpleasant image, slavery, and invoking a nasty slur, nigger. Again, civility rights. Not civil rights, civility rights. It's why our public intellectuals and our anti-racists, especially the prestige media approved ones, are a joke. So, I mean, as a thought experiment, what if you said, I'm a house Negro, to Ben Sasse? What would have happened there? I'm betting just that little change from Negro to Negro, it would have had a fraction of the effect and a fraction of backlash. And at the end of the day, like I said, what does it even matter? Because look at this lineup he has going on, coming up. I mean, Charlemagne the God already hit like eight flame emojis on Twitter, showing his excitement about how good Bill Maher is going to be coming up this week, because of all the black guests he was having on. And Charlemagne is, he already has a big black following. I think his show, The Breakfast Club, is huge in the black community. So by Charlemagne going on Twitter and saying these are the actual words. Bill Maher is going to be absolute, and then he does five flame emojis, fire this Friday. Ice Cube, Michael Dyson, and Simone Sanders. Man. So you already know what's going to happen. A lot of black people are going to tune right in. He's going to have great ratings. Even if they get mad about it, they're going to be talking about it. And my thing is, okay, why not just not go on a show? Like, that would be flame emojis. What if all the black people just didn't go on a show the next week, instead of more black people going on, just to add to the circus? Just to add to the, what's called a pseudo event. A pseudo event is something that, it's a totally man-made, manufactured event that has no real, it's just totally contrived. It's like, a pseudo event comes from the book The Image by Daniel Borstein, Borstin. It's a really good book, and I think it's a must for media analysis. I think everyone should read it. But a pseudo event is an event arranged or brought about merely for the sake of the publicity it generates, especially one designed to appear spontaneous or unplanned. So it's just an event created just to be an event, just to generate publicity. Yeah, it can also include any event hosted largely with the media response in mind. And these black public intellectuals think along the same route. They want to be part of the pseudo event. They want to generate their own pseudo event. So they're all going to go on, lend legitimacy to Bill Maher's platform, guarantee more black eyeballs, tune in, help Bill Maher get his forgiveness, because just by the act of appearing and engaging in the so-called discourse. They're almost minimizing it. Even if they go there just to tell him off, they're still giving him an air of legitimacy. And people like Charlemagne and others are going for it. So, I mean, he's going to get more ratings, more eyeballs. It'll be good for him. Black people get the catharsis of seeing other black people argue with him, or they'll get the catharsis from yelling at the screen themselves. Like more power to him. And yeah, I mean, that's basically it. It's a circus. I don't plan to watch it. I am disappointed that people are going on it to increase their own platforms, but you know, that's the game that you have to play when you're a black public intellectual. I personally only even discussed it today mostly because I thought it was a good teachable moment. I wanted people to kind of think about just the whole concept of civility rights and just look at what people say and what they're actually concerned with when they're claiming they're anti-racist. And that's why I even gave it this amount of breath, because I think it is a phenomenon that keeps recurring and is worth looking at. But I wouldn't take it too seriously. And he's going to go back to saying a bunch of other effed up stereotypes about black people that people won't even do a double take on after this is over. But he's just going to know what the new line is. Like he's like a child, you know. A child keeps testing boundaries, and when they hit a boundary, they're like, okay, this is as far as I can go. So you've told him, listen, you just reminded him, your boundary is just, you can't say this word. And he'll just gonna keep going on being racist. And black people will be happy because at least he's not being rude. They'll get to be on the show. They'll get to hawk their stuff. Win. The other thing I wanted to talk about is the whole thing with Hillary and the plantation. I thought that was pretty interesting. Hillary was quoted from one of her old books. I think it was It Takes a Nation. I mean, it's a really old book, and I'm not sure why, but for some reason, people just noticed the other day that she described what boiled down to having slaves on the plantation in the book. And somehow no one really made a big deal about this before. So she got into a whole bunch of grief. It's pretty funny because this thing was hidden in plain sight, basically. But yeah, she basically had slaves. What it was in the book, she says, there's a passage. This is how the passage went. Our one unusual aspect of living in the Arkansas governor's mansion was getting to know prison inmates who were assigned to work in the house and the yard. When we moved in, I was told that using prison labor at the governor's mansion was a long-standing tradition, which kept down costs, and I was assured that the inmates were carefully screened. I was also told that one-time murderers were by far the preferred security risk. And then, you know, she just goes on and on about, it's like two paragraphs or so about the prison labor at the mansion and how she was just very nonchalant about it and, you know, very matter-of-factly. And what was funny was in August 2016, a Twitter user, Leslie Lee III, made a joke tweet saying if Hillary was shown to own slaves, I'm paraphrasing, I don't have it in front of me, if Hillary was shown to own slaves, liberals would start making excuses for the slavery. And then, sure enough, when this thing happened, they started saying some of the craziest things. It was really funny. they were saying things today like, have you talked to actual prisoners? Because they keep chiming in about how they enjoy work while in prison. And so, oh, they were saying all types of stuff. This was the actual tweet by Leslie III. He said, the Clintons can own slaves and Democrats would tell us how well those slaves are treated. And then today, a liberal said what I just said. They also brought up about, have you talked to prisoners? Do you know how well they were fed? And all types of other nonsense. It was pretty hilarious. And to go back to the Dyson example, this is the woman that Dyson was swearing up and down was a friend to black people, just the way he said that Bill Maher was a big friend to black people. You know, it's so she, Dyson fell out with Cornel West, a friend, a mentor, and all this stuff. Long history. He fell out with him over Hillary Clinton, over this white liberal lady. He threw Cornel under the bus something awful. It was an incredible article that he wrote. I mean, I didn't like it. I thought it was kind of tacky because it wasn't even real. It didn't even really feel like it was about what it was supposed to be about. It was just like a hit piece on behalf of Hillary, like a black man attacking another black man on behalf of a white lady who is no real friend to black people and called them super predators and whatever. So this man can forgive all Hillary's transgressions. And I'm sure if he hasn't already, I'm sure he will chime in about Hillary in the plantation at some point and say, why that's not really so bad. Yeah, so he stands up for her. He stands up for Bill Maher. But he can't give Cornel West that same benefit of the doubt that he gives to white liberals. I mean, I don't think Cornel West has done anything as bad as those two things that I just described. But like I said before, that's the thing. They exist to placate and validate white liberals. Just like the black conservatives do the same for white conservatives. It's just that the difference is, for some reason with that, everybody can see that for what it is, for the hustle that it is. But not so much when it's the black liberals providing the same service to the white liberals, which is why I think, in a way, a lot of those liberal black public intellectuals are kind of worse, because at least everyone can see what the black conservatives and white conservatives, like what their dynamic is. People see it up front, and it loses its effect for that exact reason, because people can see what a hustle it is. So yeah, that's it. That's the end of this episode. Hope you enjoyed it. And next episode on Friday, we're going to have a guest, and you'll have to tune in and listen to find out who the guest is. But it's going to be a premium episode. So if you haven't yet signed up at patreon.com/champagnesharks. Again, that's patreon.com/champagnesharks. One word, no underscore. It's $5 a month and you get 2 episodes a week instead of 1. And also, go to iTunes. Champagne Sharks is now available on Stitcher, iTunes, all over, you know, SoundCloud. But on iTunes, go and leave a review and a rating. Not just a rating, but a review too. You know, just leave a review. It helps the rankings of the show. And that's pretty important. So yeah, go over to iTunes. I'll leave a link in the show notes so you can see the link. Yeah, and just leave a rating, say how you're liking the show. If you don't like the show, then don't leave a rating. And I think that goes without saying. But anyway, take care. It's been real. Have a good one.